How you been, man? Been good?
Yeah, good. I live up in Boston. We've been living in this like prequel to Waterworld here. Like we got like this deluge of rain. It's unbelievable. Like these other parts in the country where it's like forest fires and such, like not us. We're just drenched. My lawn looks great though. It's
great. Let's go.
You're listening to Making Data Simple, where we make the world of data effortless, relevant, and yes, even fun.
Hey, listeners, Making Data Simple. This is where we talk about trending technologies, business innovation, and leadership. Today, we're going to chat about strategy. I've been looking forward to this. Strategy embodies the guy that I have on today, and it's not for the faint of heart. I always ask tough questions, and he does the best at answering these tough questions. That guest today is Roger Primo. He's the general manager of strategy and corporate development. His team is responsible for shaping the overall IBM strategy, including the company's focus on hybrid cloud and AI. That team also leads corporate development, portfolio management, investment activities. He's got it. We've done this before. This is the second time, Roger, that you've been on. Last time was a fantastic discussion. And I have to tell you, very seldom directly you finish a podcast, you post it, and they say, hey, when's the next one? And that absolutely happened the last time you were on. So welcome. Thank you for being here again.
Yeah, happy to, Al. Yeah. And I enjoyed it last time. You're a great interviewer. Looking forward to it.
We'll see. Well, now you've set the expectation too high. Now you've made me nervous. Guess when you were on last, though? That's the first question.
Was it spring last year? Summer last year?
It was summer last year. That's pretty good. It was August 5th when we did the recording. I think we posted somewhere around 17th, 18th or something. I actually thought it was, life was going by too fast for me because I thought it was like January, February. I thought, oh, we're going to get Roger right back on. It's been a freaking year. I just couldn't believe it. I guess life is traveling fine for you. It's going too fast for me, I guess.
No, it's going too fast for me too. It's I think about it as like long days, short years. Sometimes that's kind of how it feels.
I like it. Hey, if you don't mind, I'm sure everybody's listened to the previous podcast, but please introduce yourself, experience, passion, brand, and then we'll jump right in.
Sure. Happy to. So Roger Primo, like I said, the main job is leading strategy for IBM. So I had a history that's had a few chapters in it, but you know, had a background in software in the early days of SaaS back when it was called application service providers. I ended up in a couple of startups and then, but ended up in business school. That took me on a little bit of a 13-year digression when I became a strategy professional working at Boston Consulting Group, focusing on corporate strategy. My main client ended up being IBM. So I helped on the early days of what is today's hybrid cloud and AI strategy. And right in the middle of the pandemic, or right at the beginning of the pandemic, rather, got a call from Arvind to kind of say, would you like to take the job on this side of the fence? And did. And it's been a phenomenal ride. But it's been based on this, and we'll talk about it today, this fundamental belief that hybrid cloud and AI, we'll get to what that really means, creates enormous value for our clients who are all struggling and need to get down this digital innovation path to help their businesses evolve. And I sincerely believe we have the best approach to help the clients get to that destination that helps them win in their respective industries.
Doesn't like BCG hate it when they get people stolen from them? Or is it part of the business plan?
It's I think BCG, it's a little bittersweet. I think BCG wants its alumni to go on to do interesting things. And frankly, I think the alumni are the best customers as well. So it cuts both ways. And frankly, I'd say it creates opportunity, right? If everybody sticks around at the top, then you kind of, how does the next generation move up?
Sounds like it's part of the business plan, which makes sense. Testimonial to their success. So that's good. Hey, if folks listening missed the first podcast, we talked about facts to support hybrid cloud. We talked about cloud's future. Why containers? Or we addressed lock-in, the IBM bar pitch, and the CHIPS Act. So we covered a lot.
Yeah.
However, it's amazing what a year can do. I don't think you've been bored lately, have you?
No, it's kind of been, well, all the core of hybrid cloud to me is still super interesting, but obviously we'll get to it. But generative AI, foundation models, kind of this awareness that ChatGPT ignited a couple months after we last chatted, it's been super interesting to just see kind of, I think it's true for you too, like what you do on a daily basis, you got to check the front page of the news because it influences it. And I don't think that I've ever had as much of a kind of enterprise technology hasn't run on that short a time cycle as it has over the last, 6 or 9 months now.
It's kind of funny you say that because you're absolutely right. It's like things are changing so fast, particularly in technology. It used to be, if I didn't get to the news later part of the day, no problem. Now I feel like, no, I got to check it first off, see if there's anything I missed before I jump in, because I don't know what customer call I'm going to get on and then find myself in a question that I didn't anticipate or I'm not aware or something. So you're absolutely right. It's like, it's a first part of your day. Start the day with news and then move on. So IBM strategy, hybrid cloud and AI, we've said that before, but let's jump right in. You said it, generative AI, every conversation now I'm a part of has to have something around ChatGPT. Has the world changed?
Yeah, to some extent it has. I'd say I think of it as a bit of a Napster moment or an Uber moment where this new technology just proves so valuable in a consumer context. That it, for our enterprise customers, it opens the possibilities and the creativity to what should they be doing in their business. So while a lot of them, I think the tech has kind of been moving on its own steady pace and we've been watching that, but the customer receptivity to it and interest and willingness to experiment and co-create and try new things, that's caught fire. And then clearly there's also just this rush of investment and innovation with so many others seeing this opportunity that there's, it feels like a couple companies founded every day in the space that keeps the innovation coming as well. So it's not just the usual suspects.
Is the tech new or is the awareness new or both?
The transformer model that, all of this is foundation models are based upon. Generative AI comes from foundation models. We often use a lot of these as synonyms, but that is a paper published in 2017 by Google. So we are 6 years post this technique being available. What we're seeing, though, is so much more scale being applied to it. So bigger models, more features, more data. And what that's doing is both it's taken like the traditional curve of effectiveness up. You see steady improvements with each generation. But it's this notion of emergent properties. It's these new things that these transformer generative AI models can do that were unanticipated, that it takes on a new capability beyond just the basic, if it's speech understanding or speech translation or things like that, that we tended to measure these models on. It's these new kind of emergent properties, which are really interesting and create new use cases. Frankly, in some cases, like brand new businesses from what these things can do.
Sounds like it's a little bit of both. I feel like it's a little bit of both. It's like I have this podcast. We talk about a lot of this stuff all the time. And yeah, there's some newness about like transformer models, et cetera. But it's like my buddies that listen to it, all of a sudden, ChatGPT comes out commercially driven. They get to experience it. And now they go, can you believe this? And I'm like, yeah, I've been talking about this stuff forever. Why don't you listen? But it is different. In fairness, it is different. Could you talk about what is generative AI in your point of view from a strategy perspective?
If I could broaden it, I'd just start with foundation models much more broadly. And it's a powerful artificial intelligence models based on this transformer model from Google, which puts kind of an unprecedented amount of compute to work in order to train these models, initially in an unsupervised way. So the model just finds a lot of intersections in the data and finds ways to understand it. And then we can apply feedback mechanisms to take that that unsupervised learning and really put it to work. And we see it, obviously, ChatGPT and text models, that's probably going to be the place where it's most powerful. The same technique you see generative AI, if it's Stable Diffusion or DALL-E, and you see it in an image generation context, you'll see we're working on a number of different contexts. And if it's geospatial or cybersecurity, or if it's predictive maintenance and kind of time series, it's going to hit a bunch of different domains beyond just that text. But then if you think about what is generative AI, if I were to like talk to some of my friends that aren't in the technology space, I almost talk about it as running the AI in reverse, saying, if you want, the AI can infer these conversations and figure out what they mean, run it in reverse and say, create that conversation, create that output in simple English or simple language for a unique query or unique kind of use case.
I like that. Running AI in reverse essentially finishes your sentences. But do you think prompt tuning is required to make it really beneficial? And could you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we, if people play with ChatGPT or any one of these, I think you almost, you have to put a prompt in, right? You have to answer, you have to give it a question to respond to. You almost always are tuning it in some way. And so if it is give it to me in a paragraph or give it to me as 10 bullet points or whatever, that is prompt tuning. And the more you put it into use cases in a business where it has to fit a regulatory requirement or the specific outputs of a business process, you have to give it more and more specific prompts in order to get back what you need for your business use case. So you can't just go in the ChatGPT situation, you can get an open-ended piece of text. And there's, you know, if it's a consumer situation, you're doing it to, you know, we messed around with it to like write a song about my son or my daughter, you know, like things like that. If it's off base, you know, no problem. Doesn't matter. If it's off base in a kind of business context, it can have some collateral damage. So there you're going to be much more specific about the prompts you want to put into it to get the right output.
Makes sense. Why do you think this is all happening now? Like you said, it was like the Google paper. What was that, 2017?
Yeah.
What makes the end of 2022 or 2023 the catalyst to success now? Why now?
Listen, I think about it, whatever it was, 2000, 2001, when Napster came out, MP3s were around, digital music was around. Like I had like a really bad MP3 player where you'd have to rip your CDs to use it.
Of course.
But it was the combination of, you know, that what, you know, MP3s and like generative AI pre-ChatGPT, they were powerful, but it's that combination of power with usability. And I think Napster did that for music, where you just had, you know, what you get today and you have to pay a subscription for with a Spotify or an Apple Music, where you got any song in the world at the tip of your fingertips. That was proven by Napster. And now it's kind of arguably there's some things to work on, hallucinations and accuracy. But with ChatGPT, you kind of got the distilled answer to any question at your fingertips as well. And so it was that usability applied to that power that I think really helped make it real. And it gave us all the ability to kind of not just read about it, but like touch and feel and experience it in a way that was very hard as like an end consumer, as opposed to, you know, I think previously it had been technically inclined to the world that would have deployed one of these models, put a UI on top of it, et cetera, that, you know, those are the only people that could really get to it. Much like in the MP3 era, you had to go through and rip your CD catalog to get things into a digital format. It kind of was the technically inclined that were the only people that were, you know, really apt to use that.
There's a lot of people that think of Microsoft and the billions that they invested are throwing a Hail Mary to play catch up. What do you think?
I'd say I can see both sides of the story. I mean, I'd say the jury's still out, frankly. I've looked a little bit into, if you listen, read the Sam Altman interviews on OpenAI, like Microsoft doesn't have really any control rights over OpenAI. At the same time, it's this incredibly deep partnership where most, if not all, of the model training execution for OpenAI happens on top of Azure. So you could argue that they've got, you know, they're highly dependent on a partner that they don't control, or they've created a brilliant partnership that advantages their whole portfolio. I think, frankly, right now, what you look at and what they're doing with Copilots, I think it really comes to life. And I think it makes so much of their productivity application portfolio more valuable. So it gives them new ways to take this effectively kind of massive leadership position they have, if it's an email or a productivity software, and make it even more valuable and provide them new ways to charge for it. I think there's some, you know, big data security, copyright type questions to be addressed. I think we will watch whether or not there's any, you know, light seeping through that kind of OpenAI and Microsoft partnership, because OpenAI has a very different mission statement than Microsoft has, right? And they are very much focused on the consumer, not the enterprise. So we'll watch it. But so far, you know, you could argue both sides.
Look, we're hybrid cloud and AI. Do they actually accelerate and amplify one another?
Yeah, Al, we've been talking a lot about this, and this may have been you planting this question for me, but absolutely. in a lot of different ways. So if you think about, first of all, I mean, just looking at kind of research recently, first of all, if you look at some of the obstacles adopting this technology, most senior leader, technology leaders that are trying to adopt this, they kind of take this phrase, kind of multi-model, multi-cloud. This AI has to run not just in one API, in one environment, it has to be embedded in the workflows of your business, right? When you think about the business application of generative AI, it has to be part of the workflows of your company. And those workflows exist in the technology environments, a data center, a cloud, a SaaS application. They exist where they are. And so, and then multi-model, by the way, you know, also the notion that there's a bunch of these smaller models, there's a bunch of different vendors of models, you know, the ability to not just have a singular API that we're kind of locked into as a company, but and kind of dependent on, but having both a multitude of models, but the ability to flex those. So multi-model, multi-cloud. So much of this will be hybrid multi-cloud in its execution by design. If you go all the way, we talked about containers, Kubernetes. If you go down to the technology of this, even if you ask OpenAI, you know, they're running on containers and Kubernetes as well. So the core tech that this executes on is that same technology foundation. And so whether or not it's OpenAI maintaining their own distribution of Kubernetes, but our intent is with what we do with Red Hat and OpenShift AI to, you know, if you want a kind of curated, secured, supported version of that for your own environment, you're going to do it with the same technology. And then I think the converse is also true. We're increasingly seeing that AI is necessary to manage and run the hybrid cloud. And so I love like the example, if you dig in the IBM portfolio of Turbonomic, right? They'll just tell a simple story about optimizing cloud storage spend. And they do it with 100,000 $5 actions to optimize S3 buckets in Amazon Web Services. It would cost you more to hire the IT admin staff than you get back in $500,000 of savings if you were to do that on a one-by-one basis. But with AI, you can manage this massively complex, heterogeneous hybrid cloud environment to a better outcome, you know, leveraging that similar artificial intelligence. So I think these, you know, we're going to see more and more that hybrid cloud and AI, you know, kind of as a flywheel that contributes to one another in our strategy.
Isn't that a huge deficiency in OpenAI though? I mean, you can get a foundational model, but you're not going to have the platform behind it. So if you want to push this to the enterprise in your domain with your data, what do you do? To me, that's a huge gap.
I totally agree. I mean, you're getting at the strategy we have with WatsonX, which is our kind of foundation model generative AI platform for business. But I'd say, you know, I'd put a third thing. If you were to really simplify, you know, multi-model, multi-cloud, and then well-governed. So explainable, understandable, trustworthy, et cetera. So you actually you're not worried about like what we're talking about in the prompts earlier, that I'm going to have a spurious result that's going to create a problem in my business. You put those together, obviously we've taken this open approach on our models, right? If it's with Hugging Face, if it's with our own models, we're obviously having multi-cloud and how we deploy. I mean, right now we're not yet there in terms of getting across all the clouds in WatsonX, but that will come. And then well-governed, you know, that's something that from the original Watson experience where we've been on that for a decade plus, I think one of the key lessons that we've learned with our clients is the importance of governance to be able to rely on these models to be able to run the business. And that was true with traditional machine learning models, with traditional kind of deep neural networks. It's true in this generation of the transformer foundation models. So I do think that we saw that coming, right, with the help of our research team. And we'd had this kind of body of experience with AI in the enterprise. And that's why we constructed WatsonX the way it is. I'd say very frankly, it got to market a bit faster because of all the hype on this. And we put much more energy into it than the kind of rate and pace it was on previously. But, you know, yeah, I think a lot of these market realities are playing to the strategy that we're deploying. It is, but let's just be honest about where we are. I think we're like 6 months now officially into like a decade long journey of how generative AI really plays out in business. So while I like the direction of travel, I mean, there is much more of this movie, ball game, pick your metaphor yet to come. So we're going to have to deliver for our clients to prove that true.
So we have a strategy, hybrid cloud AI, as we've said many times, which seems like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, it seems like the right areas, but should it be AI and hybrid cloud?
Yes. I mean, you could argue it either way. I'd say it that way. Yeah, depending on who you talk to. Today, especially, I think generative AI takes most of the oxygen out of the room on any technology conversation. So fair feedback.
That's all right. I mean, but that's exactly why I asked the question. So let's go into Watson X. One of the things that was interesting to me last time we talked was your focus. And you said it typically plays out in three different areas: portfolio, strategy, inorganic plays, somewhere in there. And by the way, you're always willing to change your answer. I change my answers all the time. But it was like you say, hey, you have a hard time distinguishing between those three. Yeah. I could understand that when I was thinking about the Watson X announcement, because it's portfolio, it ties into strategy, it even ties into inorganic plays, I think, as well. But let's just go right there. What is the Watson X announcement, in your words?
Watson X is, our announcement of the generative AI and broader AI platform for business. And the, so it is the ability to build, train, tune, deploy these models, the ability to do that in a well-governed way so that you actually can put it to work in the business. And then so that's WatsonX.ai is the kind of AI studio to do that. The WatsonX.governance is the governance capabilities to keep track of that AI. And then WatsonX.data is our data lakehouse, which is purpose-built to be able to be put to work in, general data warehousing, data storage, data analytics, but, purpose-built for foundation models as well. So that's the direction we're headed. WatsonX.ai and .data GA'd earlier this month, and .governance is, in a private beta or test and coming out later this year. But that is the strategy. And it's effectively meant to be the platform that allows you to kind of harness the potential of this powerful technology, but do it in a way that actually works for the business. And that's what you're getting at. It's the combination of getting the right models to deliver that outcome, doing it in the location that the business actually executes it, and doing it in a way that's well-governed. And I think our focus on, we call it being really targeted, but also doing that for business and only for business. We're very focused on what is necessary to make it real in that context and kind of undistracted by all the other consumer contexts that you could deploy this technology. I think it's great that it exists. I think it will be fun stuff in a lot of our consumer lives, but that's not the focus of IBM.
Look, I know I work at IBM, but I try to ask some tough questions. And that is, are we ready? Can we do it today? Like you mentioned earlier, how important trusted AI is, bias, drift, et cetera, that comes in the governance piece. And that it comes for GA later on this year. We've got the Watson AI and Watson data already generally available, but are we ready? Can you do it today?
You can. You can if you want to take some of those open source models. There's some of the IBM generated models come in very soon. I've seen the whole, I'm sure you have, the roadmap of model sizes, capabilities, domains, and when they're coming. So yes, get started today, and more is coming along the way. This is going to be, we released it first as a SaaS product. So that's going to give us the ability to update this and improve this at clock speed. You're going to see this move really rapidly. Governance side though, Al, we do better than anyone on this side. If you were to look at a machine learning model and say, how did it end up at this output? That was to some extent understandable. You could peer into that and understand how it got to that conclusion. That explainability is much more difficult in the transformer architecture. But I'd say we're more market leading in terms of the capabilities we'll deliver there.
The way I would also answer it, though, for those that are listening is, look, we've got the tools today that do trusted AI, bias, drift detection, even explainability. Anything else that you would add to that?
Yeah, well, I think you're hitting at it. None of this is stuff that began from a standing start for us. So if you look at our work in research on foundation models, it began, really right after that transformer model. So we've been working on this technology for years. We've actually had foundation models or generative AI embedded in a lot of our products like Watson Assistant for years now, and now we're putting out the platform so others can create on top of that. So it is, and then like you said, with AI governance, we've also been doing that for years. So all of this is not just that IBM just woke up and started decided being in this market. It is us combining a lot of the work we've done in, prior generation of AI, a lot of work that we've been doing in research for years around this transformer architecture and foundation models, and now bundling that together in a kind of a platform that can deliver that for business. So a lot more to come, but yeah, there's a lot of maturity even for the first release of this.
In terms of that maturity, by the way, you're right. I mean, the bottom line is you can do it today, but we're going to advance this at a accelerated pace, a pace that probably even us, we've not been used to in terms of how fast we're going with this. But you mentioned this before. This isn't our first portfolio campaign around Watson.
Yeah.
In fact, it started way back when with Jeopardy and everything else like that. I was talking with Rashir Puri, a previous podcast. He's from research around his point of view around this. How does this differ in your mind? What have we learned from the past?
Well, I think we have a much, if you look at what we're doing, we have a very, first of all, focused set of use cases. We have a much better idea of where this applies first. Of course, there'll be many creative use cases that we want to work on with our clients, but we're very focused if it's in the whole domain of customer care, if it's in application modernization. I mentioned a few. We're very focused on where to apply this first for the maximum value within the enterprise. Second, I think we do understand a lot of the workflow and what needs to happen to actually go from a brilliant AI model through to something that actually changes the business, and understand that end-to-end workflow with things like how we govern these, how we track these models, how we track the input data, how we track the model that was used. So when you look at governance, you see a lot of our data cards, model cards, et cetera, to know exactly what went into the model. So if there is a problem downstream, or you need to answer to it, whether it's trustworthy downstream, kind of the provenance of what came before it. As well as, we've learned a lot of this new technology, right? There's a deep understanding. IBM Research is one of the few organizations in the world that really has the depth of understanding on how to build, tune these models at, kind of a world-class level. And I think it's a count them on one hand number of organizations in the world that have that depth. So add that all together. I think it creates this combination of experience plus this new expertise, which really distinguishes us.
I think it was a huge success, or we've been hugely successful thus far, but I'm thinking of like Watson Assistant on how you can answer client questions within your domain. We've done an HR bot. We've got tons of models around fraud, churn, et cetera. No, we didn't solve cancer. What specialized models are available today in an enterprise domain, and which ones are going to be prioritized first?
Well, first of all, it's text models. It will be kind of that base general model that will be for things like customer care. You're going to interact in English, German, Japanese, kind of the languages that your business executes in and your customers execute in. So those will be first. But I mentioned before, if it's geospatial domains, and we've built models with NASA leveraging geospatial data, so that will apply to a whole range of environmental sustainability risk use cases. We're doing a lot around cybersecurity and how we can better understand cyber threats using these models. I talked about time series data and what we're doing there, and that applies in an industrial domain for things like predictive maintenance, where the sequence of events across a range of sensors tells you a lot around how to run your kind of your physical environment. So you're going to see a number of those coming very soon.
Awesome.
And then I mentioned it before, but the partnership with Hugging Face, I do think this is a space where if you're going to bet on a handful of companies building their own giant models that, you serve from an API, or you're going to bet on the field. I think, the field has demonstrated amazing ability to innovate. So I'd say we'll build models in the domains I described before. By the way, I ignored like coding. And so you already see things from, if it's Ansible Lightspeed for us, we'll see a lot. And that relates to what I talked about in application modernization. If those aren't sufficient for what you're doing, that's why we partner with Hugging Face, is just recognizing that harnessing the power and innovation, the open source community, just means that there's a whole range of new models, new techniques that are going to come to life. And so we want to be able to do both and kind of meet our clients where they want to be in kind of that multi-model world.
Look, I'm glad you mentioned coding because that's going to be huge. I'm working with several clients today on their own code, their own languages. You mentioned Hugging Face. And I guess the question I have on Hugging Face, there's a lot of people partnering with Hugging Face. Does our partnership differ? How is it differentiated?
I think it's mainly gets back to the architectural point we made before, which is when we partner with Hugging Face, it's to be able to do deploy those models in wherever you want them. I think most of the other partnerships are with, again, these are partners of ours, but they're individual hyperscale clouds, but it's for deployment in their environment. So, you know, if you have all of your IT in one of those clouds, fantastic. But if you're like the 95% of organizations that find themselves in a hybrid multi-cloud environment, our partnership with Hugging Face provides you with more practical ways to put those to work.
Good. This is a good time, I think, for a pause in that stated again, hybrid cloud AI or AI and hybrid cloud, whichever, which one you want to pick. Now we've announced Watson X, which is watsonx.ai, which is the AI portion piece of it. It's the watsonx.data and it's the watsonx.governance. How are we differentiated? How is our approach different from others?
So I just say it's first and foremost, it is that hybrid multi-environment, right? That ability to deploy it wherever the business needs it. It's our openness to use our models and others' models. Again, there are others that do it, but do it across that environment. It is, you know, being trusted. It's that governance capability so that you actually can rely, have your business rely on it. It's our targeted focus. So the focus on for IBM on entirely on business use cases. So we're helping our enterprise clients get the most out of their AI. And we're very happy to see others do things in the consumer domain or the productivity application domain, but that's not going to be our focus. And then it's, you know, we talk about empowering, but it's about working with our end clients who are creating value for their business. We're trying to have value creators from our AI, not just end users. So we're looking at the business innovators inside our clients and say, how do we jointly make your business better with AI and make you into a value creator? And that's what really our focus alongside kind of our clients that really co-create with us.
So I got a follow-up, but I'm going to save that because I'm going to come back to it. Last time you were on, you did a 2-minute bar pitch. You talked about technology is about picking winners and losers. You talked about betting on a company that has helped generations, considering, you know, we've done the census, the moon landing, modern banking, and we continue to pivot. That's why I'm here, by the way. You talked about hybrid cloud, complexity of the IT environment, how we're tackling that, a bit on AI. Look, it's been a year now. How would your pitch change now? If you're sitting with that CIO, you're having that drink that we talked about last time, what's the new pitch?
Well, I think clearly if you're asking me to give the pitch, I can, but I just, if I just talk about the edits, I mean, it absolutely is the, you know, harnessing the power of AI and this generative AI across your enterprise in a pragmatic way that actually works, right? I'll say the other thing, just to not neglect our hybrid side of our strategy. I think the other thing that's really happened exciting, Al, of the last year or so is that, you know, these digital transformations take a long time, but now we're seeing the proof points come out. So if you remember us talking about, you know, the 2.5x value, you know, a hybrid cloud, intentional hybrid cloud approach is two and a half times more valuable. We now see it coming back, and we just finished, like, this is hot off the presses, but we did a lot of the economic study on this with IBM Consulting of clients that have gone down this intentional hybrid cloud architecture, you know, OpenShift, you know, not the full environment, but intentionally across the things that we modernize or build new. And that 2.5 actually came back as 3+. So we've demonstrated the real economic outcome. And it's not just like that layer and how the quality of that layer versus others, Kubernetes. It's all the dependent complexity that goes away when you pick a platform. The different ways to operate, the different ways to develop, the different developer skill populations, the different compliance audits you have to go through, a lot of that expense and complexity disappears. So AI has come up, and actually our certainty on hybrid cloud has gone up because we've seen the real proof points. And if it's, you know, Delta Airlines on stage at our Think conference, which I just thought was outstanding, and they were frankly one of the early adopters to really kind of put that to work, or if it's in our own CIO shop where we can demonstrate the applications that are running on top of that hybrid cloud platform cost 90% less per application than ones running on the older infrastructure, we're now seeing the strategy theory on hybrid cloud becomes, you know, strategy proof, which is awesome. A really exciting place. We had to get there, or otherwise, after a while, you have to say, there's the strategy of merits. But now, looking back and doing the economic work, we see the real outcomes for our clients from kind of betting on IBM.
So now you just reinforce, you talk about those outcomes and the return on investment that we've seen over the course of the last year.
Yeah.
Here's a question I have back to, I said I was going to save, you were talking about our differentiation. I actually have a pitch I have to give to some C-suites. You know, I think it's probably about 40, 50 CEOs, C-suites, others on generative AI. It's in 2 weeks.
Okay.
And what I'm planning on doing is I'm going to talk about the current state. I'm going to talk about IBM's point of view, and then I'm going to talk about the call to action. I've been debating on how to end the discussion. Here's my question to you. I'd like to ask them three questions that kind of provides the direction on where they should go next. In other words, you know, think about X, think about Y, think about Z. You can help me here. What would those three questions be in terms of what you would ask the audience in terms of how they should set up their AI strategy as they move forward?
First and foremost, you got to ask the question of, where in your business are you betting on applying this for maximum value? So where are the experiments that you have to do and have to see succeed? You have to ask them, like, the team to do it, right? We've kind of demonstrated that if you just put a data scientist in the back office, like, that doesn't work either. Like, you have to think about the team. And then I think you got to, I mean, this plays a bit to IBM, but you got to think about the partner you're going to do it with and who's the one that best fits your needs, your values, your kind of reliability, et cetera. So use cases, your team, your partner would be the things I'd want to tee up. And I think those are all critically important to get after.
I'm keen on trust, controlling your own data. And you said it earlier, workflow set up to leverage that multi-model.
Yeah. I put that all in the partner bucket, but yeah, if you want to break it out into like its own thing, I guess it's a bit of the consultant in me too. I did see, if there is older generations of AI, I'm sure you saw the pattern as well. The folks maybe 6 or 7 years ago that hired a bunch of super high paid data scientists and expected magic to come from it, The batting average on that was spectacularly low. So I just, and I think most large companies had a similar experience, you know, trying to help our clients learn from that experience to get a different outcome. Because I think, you know, for most of them prior to this era, like, the cumulative ROI on AI investments has been negative because they hired these big teams, obviously, you know, initially with grand plans, and some head of analytics or AI that said that they could, you know, promise that they could deliver the world. And, you know, that person's probably not employed by you any longer. The investments that you set up aren't, you know, you're writing them off. And it's just, you know, I do think that this technology has the legitimate ability to create real value in the enterprise, but it still has to have the right setup to succeed.
Totally agree with you. And that's kind of where I was going. Look, if I'm listening out there, or if I want to put it into my business, one, it has to match my domain. It has to give me the right answers. I want to trust it. I want to use my data. I don't want to use the internet's data and not know what I'm getting. And, you know, look, nothing against ChatGPT. I think it's cool, but it's a lot of entertainment. And, you know, I also found out that I had graduated from Harvard, which I did not. And as a data scientist.
Congratulations, Al.
Of course, I graduated from KU. I like it just as well. Sorry, Harvard guys. But I want to control the data. And look, I've got to use that data fabric across the entire business. I got to make sure it's affordable, with a number of parameters, so I don't have to have a server farm just to run this thing. So there's a lot of things to consider.
Yeah.
And I think that is our vision as we're really targeting the enterprise that is clearly differentiated versus, you know, an open model like ChatGPT or something like that.
And I'd say even in like the, you know, watching the news every day, but I was just reading through a report on Friday, right? I think there's a lot of stuff that got spun up, you know, circa like February, March this year, that they've already, a lot of enterprises have already kind of pumped the brakes a little bit on a lot of the concerns that you got to. Like, hey, we can do this, but geez, it really, is it secure? Is it believable? All these, like, so, you know, I just to say it out loud, when I talk to clients, it's tough to have the combination of the excitement, but not be like the wet blanket on the excitement too. Like there are these practical things, and how do you have that conversation constructively to really channel that energy so that the goal is still to get that power that ChatGPT ignited in your imagination. I mean, there is like a punch list of real practical business considerations, and do those together. And I think this is a good question for your client preparation, which is, I think practically every enterprise without exception is going to recognize that as they go down this journey. And is it our job to help, you know, kind of pre-wire that so they don't even bump into those walls? Or should we be there when they bump into them and be there with kind of the practical answer? Because I think if you think about hybrid cloud is a similar thing, like circa 2014, 15, there are a bunch of CIOs that said, I'm going to be out of the data center in 24 months. And then the practicality intervened and we landed in this hybrid multi-cloud world that we're now going to be in indefinitely. But man, I'd love to shorten the pain for our clients on it, but they almost all had to try that and fail at it to then come around to a hybrid cloud approach. And if we can shorten that, generative AI doesn't, you know, you can get there much faster because you spin up the use cases and you say, whoa, 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 look at, you know, I just found Alec graduate from Harvard and get worried about it, right? But I think a lot of them are going down this path where they start proving it out and then they look at the data security, the believability, blah, blah, blah. And then they start looking down that more, you know, making their own punch list of the real enterprise concerns that they have to solution for.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have the solution. We've done it before. We've got the trials and tribulations to be able to share that. So hopefully clients see that and use it. Look, is there anything that we didn't mention? I know we hit a lot on AI versus hybrid cloud. Anything you want to say like up next for hybrid cloud? I mean, the good news is we've done pretty well there. People are coming around. We got like almost 50% market share on the container side with Red Hat. But what do you think is next on hybrid cloud? Anything worth mentioning?
I think right now, generative AI is the focus for the company, for like the world, frankly, right? But I mentioned it briefly, but this notion of an intentional hybrid cloud architecture. So we have a lot of clients that are, quote, hybrid cloud, but they, you know, for them, that simply means that they run on containers and Kubernetes, but a different flavor in each environment. And what they're bumping into is that still spins up the dependent complexity of different security, compliance, development method, blah, blah, blah. So, but that intentional notion is what really gets that 3x plus. So you'll see us talk a lot later in the year, I think, around this intentional hybrid cloud architecture, armed with a new lingo. Because I think in a world where like the word hybrid cloud wasn't defined enough, so we added that intentional to really get to that thought. I think that's a big, big direction of travel. And I think, you know, really changing gears and looking further out of the future, one of the things that was really cool this year is in the quantum computer space, where computing space, where IBM had cut the first demonstration of what we call quantum utility, which is, you know, a real world math problem that is in real use, is better solved by a quantum computer. We haven't gone all the way to calling it, you know, quantum advantage, because we don't want to jump too fast like some others have in the past. But I think you will see, you know, real quantum utility, where a quantum computer can do something practical for business that was not doable in other techniques. You'll see more and more of that. And so I love that we have hybrid cloud and AI, but this really powerful thing in quantum coming. And I do think, again, this is one of those ones that it's kind of the, you went through it of all these kind of technology revolutions that IBM has ignited. I think quantum's one that's coming out. It's cool. It is like mind-boggling what that those guys are able to accomplish.
I have taken several clients to Yorktown, and man, when you walk out of there, man, it's like wow. you know, you get to see the chandelier. We talk about what it's capable of, et cetera. Do you think in the near future, going back to that tagline or whatever you want to call it, our mission is going to be AI, hybrid cloud, and quantum? Because we don't have quantum in there today, but there's a lot of work being done on quantum.
It's almost a marketing question you're asking me, but I think quantum becomes, you know, we're doing, you know, mixed architectures of, you know, classical and quantum computers together. We're running a lot of that, you know, development toolkit on top of OpenShift. So I think quantum becomes part of the hybrid cloud and AI architecture. And again, picking OpenShift will be the best way to bring that power into the environment without creating a bunch of additional complexity. And obviously, call it AI, call it, you know, quantum advantage or whatever. It is a new class of analytics, which is profoundly interesting. And if you're in materials, chemicals, biotechnology, like some of these domains where the actual like quantum entanglement of electrons matters to like how that thing functions. And there will be others like risk and Monte Carlo simulations and things like that in other domains. You should be, if you're not already, you should be thinking about this now, because it will come online over the next several years. And having the teams and the software ready so that you can take advantage of that quantum computing, that's going to be part of it. So whether or not we elevate it to like a third thing, I'll let the marketing team discuss. But I think it is really, it's not wholly distinct. It will integrate into that fabric.
Actually, I totally agree with you, because quantum computing, while profound, it will be used in concert with traditional computing as we move forward. But it gives you analytics that you're never going to have or you've never had before, which is amazing what we're able to do with that, even today. And you're right, you don't want to be a laggard. When I talk to clients and they get it once they see it and leave, but you can't be a laggard here. There's things like quantum safe, et cetera. If you're on the back end of that, you're going to be playing catch up, and it's going to be ugly. That's my opinion. Hey, anything scare you with any of all this, or what does scare you? AI, hybrid cloud, quantum, anything gives you pause?
Well, listen, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about a lot of the, I think there's two things that are both kind of very short term and longer term on AI, right? I think there is the responsible use of this AI, and really, you know, I think the good news is that regulation, there's openness to regulation. I think it's coming, and I think it's desperately needed, because I think we got to have a framework. I don't think we can stop, you know, a small startup or even sometimes some of these large companies from doing things that aren't in the interests of kind of their customers or society at large. So I think that's super important, and I think we do need those controls desperately. I don't think we've yet seen the mass. If you just imagine what could be done from a bad actor, misinformation, spamming, whatever, if it's commercial, if it's malicious, whatever, I think there's a lot that this generative AI could have a real downside with the technologies out today. In the longer run, obviously, you know, there've been a variety of folks that have been loud voices on the threat of, you know, this independent artificial intelligence and it being a risk to mankind. I don't think that is imminent, but I think that regulatory framework of that step one gives us a way to handle that longer term threat. So I just think we've got to get after regulation now. And you know, IBM's point of view on this has been that it has to be much more targeted than some of the ideas. Like the notion of creating like a nuclear regulatory agency of AI just to us comes across as impractical. We think AI will be in every function that has to be regulated. So we need if it's any regulatory domain, if it's, you know, trade or ATF or whatever in the United States or whatever it is in other countries, those teams have to understand the power of AI in the domain that they regulate. Otherwise, it'll be much easier to teach all of them AI, because that's necessary for kind of any business professional today, than it will be to take some AI regulator and teach them every idiosyncrasy of trade or risk or, you know, defense. So, you know, but we think that's our point of view on how this regulation has to be fine tuned. And I think it's getting our, you know, our head of AI ethics, Christina Montgomery, has been, you know, in front of the Senate. Like, I think it's getting its day in court, and it's the right path forward. Frankly, I think it can't come soon enough, because I think there is some, if we haven't had it yet, we got an election coming in the US. I think we will see the malicious use of this technology coming soon.
Roger, you are fantastic, man. You're good at what you do. You always answer well. In fact, the second question I had to that was about regulation. You hit that before I even asked the question. So you know the drill. I want to be respectful of your time, so I'm going to wrap up. I appreciate it. By the way, yeah, fake news, that concerns me. Regulation, the only thing is, this is probably left for another discussion. I agree with you, but I am worried about some countries instrumenting regulation, other countries not. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how that consistency comes in. That could slow innovation in one country and advance in the other, but also could drive malicious acts. Boy, those kind of things are something we're going to have to get our arms around. But like I said, thank you for being here. You're always on the top of your game, man.
Hey, I appreciate it, Al. Let's do it, like you said, once a year. Let's come back. It's amazing how much changed in 1 year.
It's,
that was not the same chat this time. I suspect that rate and pace will continue.
Absolutely. Hey, I got one last one. Is there any book or anything you're reading right now that you direct folks to?
This is maybe if you're a strategy guy. So I read this years ago and I'm rereading it. It's a book called The Box, but it's about how the shipping container changed the world. And I'm reading it for analogies to container-based architectures in the software world, but it is amazing how much that simple metal box is responsible for kind of lubricating the global economy that we had today. And just like, but it disrupted so much of like what was the prior shipping industry. It created new economies because these low-cost ports would show up in places in the world. Anyway, The Box, that's the one I'm going through right now.
Look, it's on my list already, man. Everybody, Roger Primo, General Manager of Strategy and Corporate Development here at IBM. Thank you for being here, my man.
Hey, thanks, Al.
Hey, hit us on almartintalksdata@gmail.com. We love to hear from you. We'll always get people on that you prefer and topics that you request. Thank you. Talk to you on the podcast. See you guys.